This is Floyd Cowles interviewing Gary Welch for the Smoke Jumper Oral History Project at the Aerial Fire Depot on Saturday, July 21st, 1984. Gary was a jumper at Cave Junction primarily in the years 1960, 61, 62. Gary, can you give me a autobiography of yourself?
Floyd, I was born in Sunnyvale, Texas, May 23rd, 1939. When I was 4 years old, 1943, we moved to Post, Texas in Garza County, where my dad and his brother bought a ranch in 1936. And I lived in Post until I graduated from high school, again on my birthday, May 23rd, 1957. On that day, I received a letter from the Blister Service in Priest River, Idaho, that I'd been accepted up there for employment. And I left shortly thereafter, rode up to Yellowstone National Park with my brother and a friend who were working there as park rangers. I hitchhiked on up to Priest River and on out to Priest Lake and spent that summer working Blister Control. Sometime a year or two before, I'd seen the movie that a lot of other people have seen, Red Skies Over Montana, that had stimulated my interest in smoke jumping. And hitchhiking up to Idaho, I went through Missoula and saw the jump base here in Missoula. Well, the following fall, I entered Texas Tech and applied to Missoula for a job of smoke jumping. But the summer I had worked in Idaho, summer 57, had been a rainy summer. We had no fires. I had no fire experience. And consequently, did not get the job. But that was the only Forest Service job I had applied for that summer. So I had to stay back. Stayed in Texas that summer. Worked in the oil field and on a pipeline construction crew, and applied the following summer to all five smoke jumper bases, as well as to a couple of Forest Service jobs. I got a job at Detroit Ranger Station in Detroit, Oregon. Worked summer there as a brush crew and a fire guard at Vermilion Lake, wilderness area at Mount Jefferson. Bring on down my career from Detroit. The summer I worked in Detroit, which was the summer of 59, I had decided that I was having a difficulty figuring out what I was going to do career-wise, so that semester I worked the summer of 59 in Detroit, Oregon, left Salem, Oregon, hitchhiked across the United States to New York, took a plane from New York to Glasgow, Scotland, and spent the fall, well, should have been in school, hitchhiking around Europe on the youth hostel program. I came home for Christmas, the summer of 59, went to work in the oil field for about 6 weeks, and at that time applied to Cave Junction, Oregon for a job as a smoke jumper. And re-entered Texas Tech in January of 60 and received my announcement that I'd been given a job at Cave Junction for the summer of 60 where I took my training.
What was your college major?
I changed to accounting. I took a bunch of preference tests and I'd been majoring in physical education, but I was too money hungry to be satisfied with my what lay ahead in that field, so I scored high in mathematics and accounting, so I changed the major to accounting. So it was laying out that one semester was probably a real good thing for me. I went to Cave Junction in May of 1960, got there about a week before training started, and Jim Allen, the project care officer, put me to work painting fences and whatever until the rest of the jumpers showed up for training. We had 18 jumpers, which was a real large class, training rookies for one season at Cave Junction. Good, real strong class. We had a lot of Spring Corps and really enjoyed the training phase. I believe that all 18 jumpers completed the 7 jumps and became smoke jumpers. After my 3 summers at Cave Junction, I completed my last season, summer of 62, went back to Tech. I had 1 semester to finish. I graduated January 1963. With a Bachelor of Business Administration and Accounting. I was also commissioned a second lieutenant in the Army at the same time. I reported to Fort Benning, Georgia, February 22nd, 1963, to go through the Infantry Officer's Basic Course. I applied while at Fort Benning for airborne training. I went through the Infantry Officer's Basic Course, finished number 1 in my class in the physical combat 50 test, but was turned down for airborne training because of color division defect. I had gone through the flight program in ROTC for helicopter pilot. I went in with a 1981 MOS, which is helicopter rudder wing pilot. But when I took the color vision test at Fort Benning, the color defect showed up. I not only couldn't go to flight school, I couldn't jump. I spent about half a day arguing with a major over at the jump training center at Fort Benning. I could distinguish red from green. It was just a slight color defect. He said they were working on the problem, but as of that time, if you couldn't distinguish light pink from light pink, you couldn't jump. So I went from Fort Benning to Fort Hood, Texas, where I spent the remaining my 2 years of my military career, most 17 months of which were attached to post special services, playing football and wrestling and swimming on the 4th Army swimming team. I received my discharge February 22nd, 1965, at Fort Hood, Texas. Went direct to Dallas, Texas, where I went to work for the United States Treasury Department as a national bank examiner. I worked as a bank examiner for 5 years, stationed in Amarillo, Texas, Abilene, Texas, and Waco, Texas. In October 1969, I accepted a job as vice president of Community State Bank in Waco, Texas, where I worked for approximately 4 years. In August 1973, I became vice president of the First State Bank in Riesel, Texas, a small country bank located about 13 miles southeast of Waco. And I had gone out there with a handshake deal with the president of the bank at that time to buy the bank within a 5-year period. And on January 8, 1979, I bought the controlling interest from Z.A. Booth Jr., the guy that owned the bank at that time. And for a brief 2-day period, I owned 100% of the stock until I sold off about 2.5% to other directors for qualifying shares. I've been with the bank since that time. I had to scramble to find the time to get away and get up here to the reunion. That brings my career down to current time. I would like to drop back and say that in May 4th, 1963, between Fort Benning and Fort Hood during my Army career, I was married to then Nancy Hambrick. We have 4 children, a son, Lance, who will be a his third year at Texas Tech this fall. He's just turned 20 years old. Kim, age 16, who'll be a junior at Richfield High School in Waco. Cody, my son, who is 13, will be 8th grade at Lake Air Junior High in Waco. And my daughter, Whitney, who is 7th and will be in 2nd grade this coming year.
You mentioned your boys want to get in the jumpers.
Especially since they came up to the reunion. My 16-year-old would go out and jump right now, somebody just put a sheet over his back. My 20-year-old is being influenced by his mother. He won't say much around her, but one thing I failed to mention, when I jumped this fall, in the summer of 1960, the following summer, my younger brother Larry and my older brother Bernie came up and trained. And they were two of only six that were trained in the summer of 1961. You need to get my brother Larry in here. He jumped for 17 seasons. He is an old timer. But the summer of 1961, when my brother Larry, who was 2 years younger than me, came up to train, and my older brother Bernie Welch, who's 4 years older, the summer they trained was a unique summer for us. The first time in several years all three of us were working together. It was like 7 or 8 years earlier when we'd all worked on the ranch together. But my older brother graduated in high school and had worked around the country, been in the Army. My younger brother and I had worked different places, but for the first time in 7 or 8 years all three of us were together. We actually jumped several fires together. My older brother Bernie left that fall of 1961 to go in the Peace Corps. He spent 2 years in India. Larry continued to jumped, I believe, 3 seasons at Cave Junction, then went to Alaska, jumped 7 seasons.
For the BLM?
At BLM out of Fairbanks. I know I've written many letters to 3.5 mile airport.
Is he still in the jumpers up there?
No, Larry had majored in physical education and was coaching and teaching, which he still does, which enabled him to jump during the summers and continue with his teaching career.
But he jumped 17 summers.
He jumped from summer of 1960 to the summer of 1967. And I think he had a 2-year break when he went back and got his master's. Total jump seasons is 15 or 16. And he, after 7 seasons in Alaska, when he was in his 5th, 6th, 7th year, he was one of the senior jumpers in Alaska. Then he came back and jumped out of Cave Junction until 1967.
Well, let's get into your jump years, if you can kind of work on it chronologically, and starting out in 1960, what were the facilities at Cave Junction and training, the incidents that stick out in your mind, and the first jumps in both timber and training jumps, and the type of training that you liked and some that you might not like. Start discussing 60 season.
Okay, the summer of 1960, as I mentioned earlier, I had arrived at the Illinois Valley Airport, Cave Junction, where what was then called Siskiyou's smoke jumpers were located. I started working just general flunky work until the rest of the jumpers showed up. The next rookie jumper to arrive was a guy from White Plains, New York, named Mike McCracken. He's a lifelong friend of mine. And Mike got there about 2 days before training started. And one thing that sticks out in my mind, Mike, they had him polishing one of the twin beaches, just helping the pilots out. He was out there just with the dust rag polishing the wing. A couple of guys showed up from Oklahoma that were also rookies there for training. They walked out there and looked at the plane and assumed Mike was the pilot. And they said, they asked him something about the plane. He said, "Oh yeah," I said, "this baby will really get up and scoot." And they said, "No kidding." They said, "We've never flown before." They said, "We just can't wait." He said, "I'll tell you what, boys." As soon as I get her polished up, I said, "Y'all go get your cup of coffee," and said, "We'll just go for a spin." And they didn't find out until after supper that evening that he was a rookie also. But that was just typical of McCracken's personality. And McCracken became the probably all-time oak poison ivy king of Region 6. He could catch poison ivy flying over a forest fire. He'd swell up like a bullfrog. He tried every cure known to man, from boiling oak bark and pouring it, the water over his body, to his final, the McCracken solution, was a jug of Clorox and a wire brush.
What was his first name?
Mike.
Mike McCracken.
Mike's dad was a writer, editor for Reader's Digest, and for years wrote the series of the Cisco Kid. It's one thing that I can remember about McCracken, who was supposed to be here today. I don't know what happened to him. The training, again, was 18 of us, all from different parts of the country. A few of them had worked together on subregions or forest districts. But for the most part, all 18 of us, maybe somebody knew three people, but that was, I'd never met anybody there. My first season, that was the summer of the song Aleut came out, and that became our rallying cry because of Cave Junction being the home of the cavemen. But our training typically was first couple weeks was physical type training with the running of the big loop, which is about a 3.5 mile loop around the airport training facility. Run of the obstacle course each morning. A lot of competitiveness built up on the group. We had a rope climb, which is about probably 15, 20 feet, hand over hand climbing. And then that was one phase of the obstacle course, coming around, the rope climb, climbing up, touch the top, come back down. So then the next guy would come along, he'd climb up, come back down, climb back up, come back down. Next guy would come along, climb up, do 10 pull-ups, come back down, climb back up, do 10 more pull-ups, climb back down. And it became a race between two or three of us, top each other on the train. Probably the most unique part of it for all of us is something I've never seen before or since. It was unique to smoke jumping is the torture rack, where in Cave Junction was a concrete wall type affair with a slot you stick your feet in and two straps come around the calf of your leg, from which you did a back bend, touch your head on the ground, and raise back up. This was something that all of us enjoyed going back home, telling people about, explaining to them.
That was depicted in the film Red Skies of Montana, as I remember, too.
Yeah, that's a film I've probably seen 15 times on TV. I think my kids have even seen it now. And probably is responsible for a lot of people going into smoke jumping. It glorifies the job and gives it a lot of publicity all over the country. Several of the training apparatus I had at Cave Junction stick out in my mind. In addition to the obstacle course, we had a trolley or slide affair that some ingenious person had developed where they could hook you up backwards, sideways, or forward and pull a lever, and you would run down a track to a point, at any point, they could pull a cord that would release you at that point. You started off 5-6 feet above ground. You build up about a 15-mile-an-hour ground speed. And when you cut you loose, you're going sideways. You should develop practice keeping your feet together, hitting and rolling, and getting off your feet, which was no problem on the trolley. Getting off your feet was an easy part of it. But we had a shock tower, which we had two levels. You jumped from about 15 feet and dropped down and your harness on with a, they had a nylon rope that caught you just before you hit the net. And then one at about 25 feet, which is the drag of the rope would make you descent fairly, slow it down. But the squad leaders at that time, Norm Pulaski,
is he related all to Pulaski the Ranger?
No, this is a Pollock. It's P-O, it's not P, I think
P-O-L-S. P-O-L-S.
Yeah, this is P-O-W.
Did you mention Kramer?
Yeah, Fred Kramer.
Is he related to Al Kramer? Who was at the session last night? He was jumper here in 43 on, and then B-11 last night.
Not to my knowledge, but Fred, it spelled his name K-R-A-M-E-R.
Okay, a different one then.
Fred was another jumper who had two brothers jumping. And there were three Kramer brothers jumping at Cave Junction in 59, and then three Welches jumping there in 61.
Who was your base foreman?
Foreman was Al Boucher. The project air officer was Jim Allen. We had a reunion in 1968 at Cave Junction, at which time I saw Jim Allen and Al Boucher and five or six guys I had trained with that came back for that reunion.
What other type of training besides the physical fitness do you recall vividly?
We had, in conjunction with our regular training, they had a fire school there. They trained area fire people, but in addition to the smoke jumpers. We were so caught up by that time in our physical training of the smoke jumping part, as well as anticipation of our first jump, that the week's fire training is kind of a blur to me. I'd gone through a couple of them before, one in Idaho and one in Detroit, Oregon. So, other than the heat, combustible material, and oxygen phase of breaking down a fire, that's
the fire training.
The fire training week was not that impressive.
How about your first aircraft ride and the first jump? Remember anything about yourself or any of your buddies at that time?
Oh yeah, they really prepped you up for that first jump. The day before, they tied a plane down, Twin Beach down, had you get in the door of the plane, full jump gear, parachute, and ran the props up so that you got the feeling of the prop blast, the roar of the engine, and had you actually exit the plane.
And roll too?
Yes, absolutely. They kept you, which we should have been able to figure out. They kept everybody back in the parachute loft, which you couldn't see, and brought you out one at a time to the plane so you couldn't see what happened. But what they were trying to do was emphasize on you the effect of the prop blast more than anything. But the when you exit the plane, and that with those miniature feet hit the ground, which was if you jumped in the proper jump position, you had a tight tuck with your feet together. You just rolled head over heel, just flip flop down. They had a couple of jumpers standing back at the tail to keep you from hitting the tail. They didn't want to damage the plane. They didn't mind damaging the jumper. But that was the climax of jump week or the jump training. The next morning, they got you up bright and early and had rolls and coffee. And we took off probably at 6 o'clock in the morning for our first jump. We took up two planes. I was on the first plane, jumping first.
And you're in Beaches now?
Twin Beaches. Four jumpers. Another guy I trained with named Phil Beardsley was in the second plane. We were each of us the first to jump out of our class, which I don't know if it was an honor or an experiment, but we made our first jump. I exited the plane. They had squad leaders on the ground with megaphones, bullhorns, yelling instructions almost from the time you exited the plane. I think we jumped at about 2,000 feet, so we had a nice ride down.
Did you pay attention to the bullhorn?
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, I was coming down. We were competitive in our class from the very beginning. And, you know, I never dreamed I'd hit anywhere but on the X that had marked out on the field. And we were trying to maneuver the chutes down, and they started yelling at me to assume a proper landing position, and I was trying to work my slots to turn my chute. I guess I was 300-400 feet off the ground when they first gave me a last order to quit maneuvering my chute, which I did, and I ended up hanging up my first jump in one lone oak tree or some kind of a big bushy top tree. I hung up about 4 feet off the ground.
The only tree in the meadow or the area.
So I still, after I had my first jump, I still had yet to experience a landing or doing a proper roll at the end of the jump. And Cape Junction, we had a Smoke Jumpers Athletic Fund, which they bought softball equipment. And they had a series of fines, a dollar for hanging up, a dollar for getting your gear wet, but it's a dollar for hanging up when you weren't supposed to hang up. It's a dollar for not hanging up on a timber jump. And a dollar for not hitting inside the 50-foot circle. And they had about 7 or 8. It's pretty hard. A dollar for not doing the proper roll. They could almost get you for a dollar or two on any jump.
And you got hit for most of them, right?
Yeah. I guess if they had wanted to get technical, they could have gotten me a dollar for hanging up, a dollar for being outside the circle, a dollar for not doing a proper roll when they hit the ground, and probably a couple of bucks for something else. Yeah, Floyd and I were just talking about the actual hanging up in the middle of Seats Field there at Cave Junction on my first jump. But from the air, I could tell, or at least I was relatively certain from my brief experience, I was going to hit that tree. And I was trying to maneuver to get over near the spot we were supposed to be hitting it anyway. But they had gone to work on the bullhorn, yelling at me to turn loose of my lines, to assume the proper landing positions, look ahead at the 45 degree, look at the horizon, and feet together. And they were just yelling and yelling by the numbers. And I could say about 300-400 feet, I finally just gave up, sailed, just floated in like a sailboat. But looking back, it could be that they knew exactly where I was going. And they wanted me in that tree. After we completed our seventh jump, which was a timber jump, where we hung up, I remember one of the jumpers, may have been Mike McCracken, hung up in the tree, and there was a rattlesnake down below him. And one of the jump foremen, Ken Rosenberg, came over and caught the snake, picked him up behind the head and carried him around there for all the other jumpers to see. It was a little small timber rattler, about 3 to 4 feet long. But Mike, being from White Plains, New York, any snake was big. And I think think that probably was his, the highlight of his timber jump was looking down at the snake.
As he was floating down?
Right. Shortly after we, or just almost immediately after we completed our seventh jump, they had a fire bust over in eastern Oregon. And they took most of us, all the new jumpers over to Le Grand, where they had a satellite base in Le Grand, Oregon. And we flew in there late one afternoon, rolled out the sleeping bags in and around the hangars there at Le Grand. And they got us up about, well, first when we got in there, we rigged cargo chutes until about midnight. And we went to bed. They got us up about 4 the next morning. We started packing our gear, getting chuted up, got on the plane, flew out. We made our first jump shortly after daylight that morning. There were 4 jumpers. I believe there were 3 of us were rookies, and one jumper with 2 or 3 years of jump experience. We came back in, there was such a fire bust going, as soon as you got back, you went back out. And we got back in, I think in about 2 days on that first jump, morning and the third day. Again, they got us up at about 4 o'clock. We got all of our gear ready, loaded the plane, took off, what, as I remember, before daybreak. We just, there were so many fires that we'd just go out and patrol. They'd just jump you on fire without it having been spotted by a lookout in some cases. But the second fire, as I remember it, a jumper named Cecil Owen Rice, we call Owen, from Crab Orchard, West Virginia, and I jumped. There's 2 rookies on the fire. It was a fairly large 2-man fire. We jumped the fire, got a line around the top of it. At some point, brought our gear down, our paper sleeping bags and our meals, our 15 pounds of canned food, and set them at some point above the fire line, which turned out to be a mistake. The fire got over the line, burning up our sleeping bags and our all of our rations. The only thing we had left to eat was little ditty bag we carried with some baker's chocolate and boxes of raisins in it and maybe a little dried fruit. But we got a line around the fire, started mopping up, no sleeping bags. So we were on the fire all day, first day. The second day, we were there 24 hours. The third day, we got back out, put the fire out, got it mopped up, got back into the jump station there at Le Grand about 10 o'clock that night. All this I remember very well because when we got back to Cave Junction, they called Owen Rice, and I don't know why they didn't call me, but they called Owen in, and they said, Owen, said, we looked at your time you turned in. Said, you got up at 4 o'clock first morning. Said, out of 20 possible hours, you turned in 19. And on the second day, out of 24 possible hours, you turned in 23. And on the third day, out of 20 possible hours, you turned in 19. He said, I want you to explain that. Owen said, well, I said, old Texan me, said, we knock off an hour a day whether we need to rest or not. And that story got beefed up and embellished for quite some time around there. But we didn't have sleeping bags. We did have jobs to do, and we did work. You couldn't sleep out in mosquitoes. Had big mosquitoes, cold nights. So we did pretty much what we turned in, worked the hours. In that same fire bust, about my third or fourth fire jump, a jumper named Dave Towers and I, Dave was from Sherdan, Iowa, and Dave and I loaded on the plane with a C-47, about 16 of us, best of my recollection, loaded the plane. We flew out again on the type of fire bus where lightnings had just worked over the ridge tops, and there were fires everywhere. It was no problem finding the fire. It was just getting the jumpers out and figuring out how many to put on each fire. First jump, they jumped, I believe the jumpers were out of Okanagan in Washington, but two men jumped. We came back on the second pass, and they had laid out a bar 4, I believe. The guy broke his leg, whatever the designation for that was.